see how 1,000 for Marlboro Plaza tents and Sean Dunn, this as more resistance to all that and more coming up on the DC Takeover edition of What's at Stake. The record-breaking government shutdown, major DC housing win for Marlboro Plaza tenants, and Sean Dunn, the sandwich guy, symbol of resistance, is acquitted. All that and more coming up on the DC Takeover edition of What's at Stake. Good morning, welcome to What's at Stake. I'm your guest host, Camille Freeman. I would like to first start by congratulating the courageous Marlboro Plaza tenants who fought back against dangerous, unlawful housing conditions for years with the support of their community. And now with a major DC housing win, they have secured a $41 million judgment over appalling conditions at Marlboro Plaza in Ward 8. This is the largest housing conditions judgment in DC history. For years, more than 2,500 tenants endured severe mold, water leaks, and flooding, insects, rodents, broken elevators, and lack of heat, AC, and hot water, while the owner defied court orders to fix it. Now, the court has ordered the former owners to pay $29.8 million in restitution to tenants and over $11 million in penalties and attorney's fees. The court concluded the award in this case serves as a reminder to landlords that legal intervention is best prevented by timely ongoing investments to ensure their properties offer the habitable conditions to which all tenants in the District of Columbia have a legal right to. The Office of Attorney General will work to collect the full restitution and penalties. And in addition, the Office of Attorney General has collected over $1 million from the settlement with the former property manager and will distribute all of those funds to impacted tenants. Marlboro Plaza is now under new ownership and has been renamed Langston Views. Thank you to DC Attorney General Brian Swart for his support, who was expected to join us here today after his verbal commitment to do so on the 32nd annual Anacostia Coordinating Council boat ride. No shade. But we're looking for him to join us sometime in the near future. Having said that, we do have with us this morning what we were supposed to have, Ebony McMorris, White House correspondent, and also Nee Quarterly, another White House correspondent host of the More Perfect Union on KBLA. But they got called to the White House just this morning. But here to join us today is Samantha Page Davis, Black Swan Academy and of Free DC. Welcome, Samantha, and good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for making the time to join us here today. We were supposed to have, of course, a roundtable discussion, but just me and you are going to rock out. But I was on Connecting the Dots with Dr. Wilma Leon. His show can be heard on Sirius XM. He asked me a pointed question that I don't think I answered very well. He asked me, what would you have people do? And he was like, other than, of course, vote for you next year when you're for Congress again. But what would you have people do? He asked me that. And I should have said, could have said, would have said that Malcolm X said, whenever the government has not done its part, it's up to the people to do their part. And one of the things, of course, I think I would like to see is more of a culture of noncompliance. But what does resistance look like for you? What would you have people do at this moment in time during an authoritative fascist regime and the D.C. takeover?
Yeah, I love that. Three things come immediately to mind. Recognizing that there is this regime, this fascist regime being built. There are some things that are key to not just our survival, but for us to be able to come out of this stronger, freer, safer. The first thing that comes to mind is our ability, and I said three, let me say four, our ability to stay grounded in our morals and our values, to not let the threats, the fear of the Trump administration and others get us to go and act in ways that we wouldn't do, get us to harm people that we wouldn't harm, get us to do things, say things that are against our rights. And so this idea of not obeying in advance, which I feel like is becoming popularized, is something that is key for us to think within our individuals, within our institutions, for those who are elected officials, right, to not obey in advance with all of the threats. The other thing is, how are we really humanizing one another and celebrating ourselves? So creating and finding those moments to still have joy, even in the midst of what I will call this terror. And so what does that that look like to really remind ourselves that we deserve joy, we deserve love, we deserve to be cared for, and all of those things, and see that for ourselves, but also in one another. And then third, what I would say is, how are we practicing solidarity with one another? As you know, one of the things that is really important to me about the work that I've done in this city is supporting the building of the mutual aid network during the pandemic. And we now know that the people who are looking to get involved in the mutual aid network, whether that's through volunteering or from needing their basic essentials met, have met peak the pandemic requests. So as many people during the pandemic who are looking for basic essentials are looking for that now. And so what does that mean? That means that we have a responsibility to do something. That means that we have a responsibility to identify our resources, our skills, our talents, and be in community with one another and practice that solidarity to stand up against all of the federal agents and the ICE and the way that MPD is collaborating with them to stand up and support those individuals. And it means that we need to be building up alternative systems, right? The master's tools aren't going to get us free. And so what does it look like? At the same time, we're trying to dismantle all of these oppressive systems. The same time, we're calling out Trump, knowing that it's not just about Trump. Trump can leave the office tomorrow and not many things will change about our tangible conditions. And so how are we building up alternative systems to ensure that everyone has what they need?
Yeah, we need to make sure that everyone understands that this is not going to just go away. This is white supremacy's last stand. They have looked at the brownie of America, and they are doing everything they can to change that course. And we need to be real about that. And when you say about, a ban in advance, Laura Ingraham, Fox News, Laura Ingraham said that Muriel Bowser is the best mayor Washington, D.C. has ever had. She said that on air, and that was her being rewarded for what? A ban in advance. I believe that Trump, even on record, commending her as a model to follow. So this is what we have, and we need to recognize that. And unfortunately, too many good government employees in Washington, D.C. are also coinciding with that because it's in their best interest to do so. And they train not to bite the hand that feeds them. And that's a very self-serving interest. And we need to call that out because we are, we're living in revolutionary times. This is not the time to capitulate and, as you say, obey in advance. But now that, Democrats have capitulated again after a record-breaking government shutdown, what do you think that leaves us here going forward? Because not only is this going to be an impediment to the healthcare crisis in this country, now it's an impediment to the SNAP and the food assistance programs, but I think it actually creates a crisis that creates an opportunity to expand our demands for these things. What say you in regards to that?
Yeah, I think this agreement is absolutely horrible and terrifying in many ways. Every single time we give an inch, right? Like we all grew up with Black mamas. When you give an inch, right? They take a mile. And I believe that each and every attempt that this Congress, that the Trump administration puts in front of us, where we could, right, we could choose to stand our ground, where we could choose American people. When we don't do that, that's giving them greater permission and planting the seed that you can try to push us more and more and more. You can continue to remove more and more resources from us, and there won't be people, or there aren't the people power. There's not the people power built yet to really stand up in a revolutionary way. And so I do think it is a strong reality that we're going to continue to see our social safety nets pulled up from under our feet. I do think that it is going to further escalate all of the harm that this administration has already done in less than a year in office. We have to be mindful that the reason why things were so hard these last 40 days was not just because of the government shutdown, right? Folk have been losing their jobs in record numbers. And so the need for SNAP benefits was that more important because people already had less. The need for healthcare and for not us getting these premiums, quadruple, in some cases, the rate is because people were already hit so hard. And so I think we're just going to continue to see a further decline in the resources that are available to our people, which means we need to get ready, if we're not already ready, to meet the need as it's coming.
And then again, I apologize to our listeners that our two White House correspondents, Ebony McMorris and her colleague, Nee Corte, was called to the White House this morning, because the government shutdown, is coming to an end due to the capitulation of 8 members of the Democratic Party, and also the leadership with Chuck Schumer, who needs to be replaced, and he could take Hakeem Jeffries along with him. I hope you're on board with that. People that are not familiar with his track record, please look him up. And I'm so shocked that this is the Leonard Jeffries nephew. How far has the fruit fell from the tree and rolled down the hill and got hit by oncoming Zionist traffic? That's Hakeem Jeffries. But with the end of the shutdown and the explosion of healthcare costs is going to rise as a result of this. What I was saying, that the opportunity that this crisis creates is furthering the demand for universal healthcare for all. Because these, not only is America the only industrialized nation that doesn't have healthcare for all, but we also pay more than any other country. So those two things existing at the same time, and Chuck Schumer, who is a self-devout Zionist, and Israel has free healthcare for all its citizens that is subsidized by taxpayers here in this country. And of course, D.C. taxpayers pay more per capita than anybody else in this country. So therefore, they're most disproportionate. Mostly responsible for providing free health care to apartheid Israel. But I think this would give ammunition to demands for more universal health care support going forward. That's my two cents. I know we're built on Academy for DC. You guys are on the left side. What do you say about that, and how do we interpret it in terms of moving forward and creating a more progressive agenda?
Yeah, I mentioned that I feel like the ending of the shutdown is indicating to the Congress and Trump administration that we don't have the people power yet. And heavy on that yet, I believe that the conditions are ripe, and Free DC will say that when we continue to have these cycles of attack on our humanity in DC, of our statehood and home rule, that when we continue to have these cycles of attack, and when we continue to fight and push back, then the conditions are ripe for us to continue to build that people power, for us to kind of have the phoenix rise out of the ashes, right? For folks to say, like, now is the time. If I haven't stood up before, now is the time for me to stand up. If I didn't understand the value of universal health care now, or universal child care, or right, so on and so forth, then I now understand that. And I do think it is having this very like unifying effect, where we're seeing more organizing happening across races, across religion, across sectors, where for Free DC, it's not just everyday residents who are committing to Free DC. It's also union members. It's also faith leaders, right? And so we're seeing this cross-sector movement of people finding what it is that unifies us. I think it's unfortunate that it took this long, but I do think it's this unifying source that is, it can, on the other side of things, get us all of those things that we know we need and deserve, including universal health care. But I don't think it will stop there.
I don't think it will stop there. No, we got to keep moving forward. Now, can we talk briefly about your work with young people with the Black Swan Academy, and then what led you to supporting what many would say has been probably one of the most progressive and active organizing organizations to come on the scene and sometime in the nation's capital, and that would be Free DC.
Yeah, so Black Swan Academy founded about a little over 10 years ago with the belief that young people are the experts of their experience. And through this anti-racist lens that tells us that if we really want change, if we really want the best solution, then we are obligated to not just center the voices of the most impacted or the most marginalized, but to follow their lead. And so Black Swan Academy is doing that by investing in the leadership of young folk, where they are setting their own agenda. They call it Black Youth Agenda every other year, and putting really tangible policy changes, practice changes in front of our elected officials and our community leaders every year. Saying we demand for affordable housing. We want safety in our communities that's not reliant on the over-policing and the criminalization of our bodies, saying that we want mental health support and that we want better schools. And that work, particularly the centering of youth voices, trusting their leadership, really a lot of cultural organizing in there as well, in connection to the work that I do around racial and gender justice, really brings us to the importance of Free DC and how I show up in that space. But Free DC is on a commitment. We have this 4-year, maybe 5-year campaign where we're trying to mobilize 24,000 DC residents, both to defend home rule, but also to win the dignity, the freedom of all DC people. How do we do that? It has to be through this explicit racial justice lens, this explicit commitment to anti-oppression and anti-racism, because what I think people know but don't understand is that we are in this situation as DC without having statehood, specifically because of racism, right? When we think about the nation's capital becoming the capital, the first vote, don't quote me exactly on these years, but the first vote in our for elected officials happened around 1820, right? DC residents were able to vote their elected officials into office from 1820 to 1867. 1871 is when the president and the Congress decided that that will no longer be the case, that they would remove that right from DC residents and to appoint from the president and the Congress, right? No residents were involved in this, to appoint leaders of our city. The only difference between that happened between 1820 and 1871 was that last election, 1867, was when Black men specifically, had the right to vote. Right. And so the stripping away of our right to vote and to govern ourselves is specifically linked to this belief that Black folk did not have the right to vote, should not have agency and autonomy and decide who is representing them. And so we can't do this work as Free DC without. And then let me say 1871, the Home Rule Act that Marion Barry, Anish Jenkins, and so many others have been involved in either creating or protecting. That Home Rule Act didn't come until 1973, right? So almost a century later. And so we have to be mindful, and we have to center the Black folk here in DC, from the natives to those who have made DC their home. Because if we're not addressing racism, if we're not addressing all of the ways that oppression has impacted us at different intersections, then Free DC is not truly going to be a Free DC, right? Even if we get, I said this before, even if we get Trump out of the office, Free DC is not truly going to be a Free DC unless we center Black folk in this work. And that's what we tried to do through Black Swan Academy. That's what we're pushing Free DC to do. And that includes holding our local elected officials accountable who aren't doing that. And so young people came together in August. And while everyone was focused, rightfully so, while everyone was focused on the Trump administration and Congress and how they occupied our city, young people, 60 plus young people, gathered in August to say, yeah, and also our local elected officials should be a part of this, right? We need to call out our local elected officials and hold them accountable too. And since then, young people all across the city have been calling on local elected officials, our council members and our mayor, to really be in solidarity with them and protect them in ways that they have failed so far to protect them.
Yeah, Dr. Francis Cress Wilson and Mr. Nilla Fuller said that until you understand the institutional white supremacy, what it is and how it works, everything else you think you understand will only confuse you. So touche, and congratulations to over 10 years of Black Swan Academy. But the thing that got me excited about Free DC was the first time you mentioned 24,000. What people need to know is that that's a metric for 3.5% of the population, yep, defined as critical mass. And I was so blown away by that, because because I didn't know that was like the universal number for critical mass. Yeah. And I think that, you know, when we have a president of the United States of America appealing to the Supreme Court of the United States to starve other Americans and children, that critical mass need to be represented. We need to hear from them loudly. And as a congressional candidate, I got 22,000 votes in D.C., more than Donald Trump got in his best night, by the way. So 22,000 and 24 is the critical mass. We're knocking on the door. But speaking of resistance, I wanted to celebrate the man who threw a Subway sandwich at a federal officer in the early days of the Trump administration, law enforcement surge in D.C., the D.C. takeover. Early this summer, he was just found not guilty of assault. Attended his trial. That's Sean Dunn. He has quickly become a symbol of resistance in D.C. against the Trump takeover of law enforcement, ramping up deportations and grabbing people and violating people's rights and human rights, I would say. But he painted posters and internet jokes spreading around, paying homage to the incidents, because we felt that that was another, because nobody was hurt, was another of a civil disobedience and peaceful resistance. And the trial was lost by the feds because it came out that they were themselves making fun of it. They had created a pennant that said a felony sandwich. And because of that joke, it was hard for the jury to convict him. But a clip to hear from Sean Dunn as he's acquitted of federal charges of assaulting a police officer. He's coming in, from the courtroom.
How do you feel?
Well, I have to say Nick, Julia, and I, and the entire team were really very relieved, not only just as Sean's lawyers, but just also as people who are regularly find ourselves dissenting in many, many different respects. In some dissent, we're together, in some dissent, we stand alone. But we really want to thank the jury for having sent back an affirmation that dissent is what is not just tolerated, it is legal, it is welcome, and we thank them all very much for that work. Really, the entire team thanks them. And you know, there's no such thing as a singular person making a difference. So please, all of them, you should all be here. I'm really just so excited. I don't know how to say this. I'm very, very happy that you stood up for me.
Mr. Dunn, how are you feeling?
Firstly, I'd like to thank especially Sabrina, Julia, and Nick for countless hours, and the rest of the team at Steptoe. And I would like to thank Steptoe for offering all of their services pro bono. I would like to thank family and friends and strangers for all of their support, whether it was emotional or spiritual or artistic or financial. To the people that opened their hearts and homes to me, I am eternally grateful. And I am so happy that justice prevails in spite of everything happening. And that night, I believe that I was protecting the rights of immigrants. And let us not forget that the Great Seal of the United States says, E pluribus unum. That means from many, one. Every life matters, no matter where you came from, no matter how you got here, no matter how you identify. You have the right to live a life that is free. Thank you.
Sean, what does that have to do with throwing a sandwich, though? I mean, what?
All right, thank you very much.
Yay! And there you have it. And of course, you're gonna hear the legacy media make light of what they just said and try to minimize it by, again, what does that have to do with throwing a sandwich? They just told you what it meant. It was a form of civil disobedience. It was a form of resistance, and they tried to minimize that. But I thought that was important to hear from him and his immigrant attorney, by the way, and Steptoe Law Firm, who represented him pro bono. This law firm worked to represent this man in his case pro bono, whereas we've seen law firms in D.C. capitulating to Trump, bowing down and, as you said, complying in advance. So this is what we've seen from the courts here locally in the D.C. takeover. And now we're looking at, curfews for children, other violations that has been taking place. And these are at the hands of the courts who are all serving the agenda of the Trump fascist regime. Now, what do you have to say to how do we should be pushing back and demanding these institutions that are supposed to be representing the people to stand up to authoritative fascist regimes?
Yeah, I think a few things come to mind, and thank you for sharing that clip. I want to name and lift up that those charges were dropped and he was released, there are still people in our community who are being either held or in this case I'm about to mention still have charges against them for protesting, right? We have comrades, and there's a group called DC Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. And four of our comrades were imprisoned in November 1st after Mayor Bowser's curfew that went into effect. And so four of them went down to the metro station at Navy Yard to support particularly the Black youth who were being racial profiled by local MPD and federal agents and not being allowed to leave the metro. And these four comrades were arrested and their charges up until yesterday, at least, still did not get dropped. And so some of the ways and requirements that we're required to be in solidarity with folk in this moment is supporting at the court. And I'll find the number and drop it for anyone listening to call and demand that those charges be dropped. But what we're seeing is the courts are really continuing to, target specifically Black people. A lot of the conversation around the impact of the Trump administration in DC and nationally has been really focused on ICE. But what we're seeing at the courts is, while yes, ICE is kidnapping and deporting our neighbors every single day in DC and nationally, and we also see federal agents and local metropolitan police department continuing to kidnap our people, Black people, off the streets of DC for what judges have said, what courts have said are some of the most ridiculous charges that they've ever seen in history. And in some cases, they're required to even hold them where prior to the occupation, they could make a decision to release folk pretty quickly. We have, Harry's Wildest Dreams and other folk in our community have been doing freedom watches, have been going down to the court, and they did this before the occupation. But they have folk who are there and being released up until 2 a.m., 3 a.m., right? In some cases, 100-plus folk going in and being charged for these ridiculous charges. Minor offenses doesn't even feel like the appropriate term to use. And that impacts folk. That is a way of being mentally and emotionally unsafe. That is a way, if those charges aren't being dropped, that is a way that continues to push Black people, Black men specifically, into the prison industrial complex. And so we see these courts as central points to the injustice that we continue to experience. And it's only intensified since August. And so how do we address that. What are we calling on, not just the courts, but on the people, is yes, definitely not obey in advance when you have the power and the discretion, the discernment to stand for the people to do that. And I do think, I don't usually shout out electeds, but I do think the Attorney General Brian Schwab has been showing and modeling some ways that we can do that. But how are our judges and our court systems following that that model? And then also for the people, court watching is seen as a very effective tool, has been very effective to let folk know that the community member is not a criminal. The community member is surrounded by people who care about them, who has families, who potentially has jobs and responsibilities, right? And so showing up in numbers and all of the court cases, which are, I think, more than people realize, there's a number of court cases where you can go and sit in the courts in person or be outside the courts and give them a welcome, make sure they have transportation, make sure they have food. But also there are these specific
Samantha, cases we got to put a pin in it right there. We got to take this break. We'll come back to it on the other side of this. You've been listening to What's at Stake with Samantha Pace Davis and your guest host, Kimon Freeman, on WPFW 89.3 FM.
Peace. This is your social justice calendar for the week of Monday, November 10th, 2025. Wednesday, November 12th is Pan-African Community Action's next Asada Shakur Study Group session, Privatized Healthcare, Insurance, Exploitation, and Healthcare as a Human Right, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Black Workers and Wellness Center on 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More info and registration is on privatehealthcareandhumanrights.eventbrite.com. Thursday, November 13th at 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., there will be a general info session of the work Harriet's Wildest Dreams is engaged in. If you're interested in building a better world, free from patriarchal violence, free of harm for queer people and people of color, this is what this event is all about. They will reimagine what this world can be and reclaim safety for all of D.C. For more info, visit harrietsdreams.org. On Sunday, November 16th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Haile Gerima and Sankofa Video and Books will hold a space of artistic expression and protest, featuring a special musical performance by Munit Mesfin, located at Sankofa Video Books and Cafe on 2714 Georgia Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. For more info, visit Sankofa.com. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar connects you to grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. This is due by Thursday at 5 p.m., at least 1 week in advance of your event. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar helps build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
And welcome back. This is Kimon Freeman, the guest host for DC Takeover Edition of What's at Stake. I'm joined here by Samantha Pace Davis from Black Swan Academy and Free DC. Again, apologize to my listeners, who are two White House correspondents, Ebony McMorris and her colleague, Nee Corday, was not able to join us as they was called to the White House just this morning with the government shutdown ending due to the capitulation of Democratic leadership. But before we get started, I want to add on to the social justice calendar. This Saturday, November the 15th, 2 p.m. the White House, there would be the rally for peace with Venezuela, money for people's needs, not the war machine. This White House protest is courtesy of the Answer Coalition, Code Pink, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, along with the Cuba and Venezuela Solidarity Committee. This is near and dear to my heart because I spent time in both Cuba and Venezuela, and they both have a lot of similarities. There are a lot of black people that live in Cuba and Venezuela. There's a lot of white people who fled Cuba and Venezuela, who were readily accepted in this country. And we just need to acknowledge that it's the oil, stupid. That's why they're talking about Venezuela right now. All right. And of course, Cuba has a superior healthcare system than the United States of America. And they're supposed to be a socialist third world country. All right. So having said that, welcome back, Samantha Pace Davis. Let's pick up where we left off. We was talking about the courts who are part and parcel of the Trump authoritarian fascist regimes. And that means MPD as well. And people need to be reminded that Albert Pike like was a statue that was torn down next door to the Metropolitan Police Department headquarters that Trump is vying to replace. But he was the founder or one of the founders of the Ku Klux Klan. So why is a statue honoring the founder of the Ku Klux Klan next door to the Metropolitan Police Department should give you some idea and some context to where we are with policing in America. And we was talking about the over policing of my kids. I know Black Swan Academy works a lot with the youth, and you was talking about the youth curfew. Unfortunately, a lot of bourgeois people in this city would applaud this. So let's take it from there.
Yeah. So but getting into the youth curfew, and thank you for centering the experience of young people in this conversation. Getting into the youth curfew, I will name, I did name that several of our comrades still have charges against them for protesting and protecting young people from the youth curfew on November 1st. And so I did want to offer those numbers for you all to call these two offices and demand that all of their charges are dropped. The number to the Attorney General's office, 202-514-2001. And then the U.S. Attorney's office, 202-252-7566. And again, these are comrades from organization here on the ground, and I think actually nationally, but this is the DC Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. And so the youth curfew has unfortunately been, I think, another example of how I believe, and many will say, Mayor Bowser and some of the council members are really aligning themselves with the Trump administration. We have in the city have always, well, since 1995, have had a youth curfew where young people were 17 and under were asked to be in their house or somewhere safe from 11 p.m. on weekdays and 12 midnight on weekends, right? And what we saw happening over the summer was this emergency legislation that Brooke Pinto put in place to say, let's give the police authority. And by police, it's not just the Metropolitan Police, but even then it was also federal agents. It was also National Guard. Let's give the law enforcement officers the authority and the chief of police the authority to create curfew zones. So we're not talking about 11 p.m. curfew, y'all. We're talking about one person, the chief of police, being able to decide when young people are not able to go in specific areas, and most of these areas are business districts, to go to specific areas as early as 8 p.m. And if they are not abiding by that curfew, meaning they are still around by 8 p.m. And what we saw the mayor did around Halloween was actually 6 p.m. If they are not, if they're still in the area, then they could be arrested. Who are we talking about? We are talking about Black youth. There was a video that circulated. In fact, that some of our comrades who have these charges against them right now, there was a video circulated clearly of Metropolitan Police Department racial profiling Black young people at Navy Yard Metro, allowing them to or stopping them from moving while allowing white young people to go and greeting them nicely, head nodding to them while they're holding Black young people essentially hostage, right, at the metro station. And so we have won that fight multiple times, and we continue to see Mayor Bowser put all of her resources behind ensuring that there is this youth curfew and this additional way to heighten the presence of law enforcement in our young people's community. And so it's very concerning. It's under the guise of youth safety. We know that there's nothing about the curfew that is preventative. Every research suggests that it is not an effective tool. Council members who even supported the curfew named that it was not an effective tool. And here we are with this emergency and temporary legislation passed and a permanent legislation that is up for people to consider on December 4th.
All right. And we've just been joined by our White House correspondent. Brother, please got to bless me. I got to try to do my best with your name here. You can correct me. Dr. Nee Kwotele.
Yes, Dr. Nick Cordelai Corte. Good morning.
Almost there. The slave tone. Slave tone was doing his thing this morning, brother. we just got a few moments left, so the floor is yours. We was talking about how the capitulation of local government with the Trump fascist regime, but you can take us in another direction as your White House correspondent. You might have a different point of view on what's going on from the top going down from the government shutdown ending due to Democratic capitulation. But the floor is yours.
Well, I just want to thank you for organizing this and for bringing us all together. These are, you know, really challenging times. It's amazing how within a week the Democrats, you know, seem to have gone from getting that shot in the arm and offering this nation a shot of hope in terms of beginning to turn things around. To a week later, a number of folks who are part of the base feeling, you know, some level of being demoralized. That's certainly what I've been hearing from coast to coast. I was in Washington, D.C. last week, and this week I'm in California, and there's a lot of people that are sort of throwing up their hands. But there also are a lot of people that seem to be registering with the Working Families Party. A lot of folks really seeing some alignment between their circumstance and what folks who are part of the Working Families Party are fighting for. And so, you know, I think this moment may birth a political realignment. I think you know, Democrats have to have the courage to follow through with what they say they're going to do. That's why people are upset. You know, you've been telling people for 40 days and 40 nights, you know, that you're going to throw down on healthcare. People have been waiting to see, you know, what is the issue where Democrats are going to go to the mat for everyday people. And they found that issue and folks were behind them and then they blinked. And so, you know, will Democrats be able to sort of recapture some of the energy lost through this vote? Time will tell. But you know, keep in mind that, you know, whether you're talking about D.C., Chicago, or even Los Angeles, where I'm at today, you know, you have cities that are feeling the federal overreach every single day, you know, with these ICE raids and with, you know, this mass deportation campaigns. I remind you that right here in Southern California, you know, you had an exchange between, you know, an ICE agent who had pulled their gun out on somebody and local law enforcement that was like, wait a minute, what's going on? It's a reminder that ICE is not trained in local policing. And even the local police, you know, aren't batting 100 when it comes to policing folks and, you know, protecting our civil rights and civil liberties. And so I think the tension is continuing to build, but people are paying attention. We saw the No Kings protest where folks came out en masse. We saw the election last week where folks came out en masse. And so, you know, to quote Marvin Gaye, what's going on? People know what's going on ain't right. You know, I encourage folks don't panic, but continue to organize. And that's what we're seeing from coast to coast. And I think ultimately that's what's going to make the difference, not just at the polls, but in terms of keeping each other safe.
And we're here to drag this party kicking and screaming to the left, because we have to address the misleadership class that's, that we're under, unfortunately, under the realm of at this present time. Now, Dr. Nee, you was talking about the Democratic Party from a bird's eye view from the top down. Sister Samantha Page Davis was talking about the local on the ground Democratic Misleadership Party. And we have the same issues with both, whether it's disappointment and not moving us forward, whether it's frustration of actually capitulating and contributing to our own impression of black and brown and working class people. How can we best address this misleadership class, and how do we drag them kicking and screaming to the left to rise to this progressive moment and speak to this moment? Because clearly this is not what's happening there.
Well, I mean, I think when you look at the most recent election, I think there are examples of folks who were elected on an agenda that people live and feel every single day. I think when we look at Zohran Mamdani's win in New York City, I think that represents sort of a shot of hope. You know, yes, folks want somebody who's going to stand up to Trump, stand up to this administration, but they also want somebody who's going to balance out that very important role, that vital role, with delivering on an economic justice agenda, delivering on affordability.
Yeah, where's our Project 2025?
Well, how about that? You're right, and it's a serious indictment, brother. It's a serious indictment, you know, on a number of these democratic institutions. You know, they get millions and millions of dollars in funding every year, right? And it's like, okay, you know, how did you not see this coming? How did you not see this coming? It's important to note that the Heritage Foundation and the conservative ecosystem have been building Project 2025. They have been building that for decades. They didn't just build this, you know, when Trump decided he wanted to return to the White House. They've been building this over years. And so what have folks on the left, what have they been building? What plan have they been building that is not reactive, simply reactive to the folks on the right, but is a demonstration of the radical imagination that we so desperately need in this moment? And so, you know, I'm convinced, you know, we're not going back to the way things were. You know, even after 2028, and that's assuming it's a normal 2028 election, which is a big assumption in this moment, we're not going back to the past. And I think there are a number of younger folk that understand that, and that's why they are showing up the way that they are. But the question is, where are we going in the future? And what I don't see from the Democrats that I cover on Capitol Hill and other parts of the country, well, what I'm not seeing is, what is the vision for the future that is not in reaction to what Trump has done today or what he's planning to do tomorrow? I think it seemed that Democrats had a glimmer of what that future could look like with health care, you know, that was at least affordable. And we haven't talked about single payer, you know, just, you know, affordable health care, right? Restoring those cuts to Medicaid. That's important, right? But where are we going? What does that future look like? And absent that, I think it's going to be a very bumpy road in the days ahead.
All right. Thank you so much for that, Sam. We just got a few moments in the program. I wanted to make sure that we had some opportunity for closing comments or contact information if you want to share that. But ladies first, so Ms. Sam, you have the floor.
Yeah, I just want to remind folk, well, there is a 2028 presidential election. We are also electing local leaders here in D.C., and folk are starting to announce who is running some major seats, right, from Congress to the mayor, to the chairperson. These are people who are key to whether or not we can actually achieve a free DC. And so for folk to speak and act, not just with their vote, but then to call folk out, to call folk in, whatever you want to say, but we have to both vote and hold our elected officials accountable. And we have to start building up new systems, alternative systems. We have to start taking care of each other. And these are things that are true to our cultures and have always been true to our culture. So how do we tap into that and practice that solidarity and care for one another? Get involved with Free DC. You can find us Free DC Project, dc.org, on Instagram, Free DC Project. I'm on Instagram, Samantha, page me, or Black Swan Academy. And so would love for you all to join the movement, to join the work.
Join the movement and join the work. And I have to shamelessly promote the fact that I will be running for Congress again, freeman4congress.com, freeman, the number 4, congress.com. The last thing we need is more establishment candidates representing and up withholding the status quo. Dr. Nee, you got the last one here.
Thank you very much. You know, I would say that We have to be cognizant of the power of information. We know that our communities have been a target of mis- and disinformation by actors, both foreign and domestic. I would encourage people, in the words of the great Erykah Badu, when she says, you know, I pick my friends like I pick my fruit, you know, pick your media.
That's right.
Pick your fruit. Support Black media. Of course, my home outlet is KBLA Talk Radio. It's the Tavis Smiley station, based in Los Angeles. There are Black Star News, you know, Capital B News, The Griot, AURN. My sister, Ebony McMorris, who's a White House correspondent for AURN, wanted to join us, but was stuck at the White House today. Catering to other matters, but support Black media, support Black journalists. To the candidates out there and would be and could be candidates, you know, make sure that you're giving the Black press the same level of attention and focus as you are other media outlets, because we're in community. Right. We're not covering the community on the sidelines. In the tradition of the Black press, we understand our job is not just to, be passive observers, but to educate and liberate. And so that is my message this morning. I thank you for convening us. Remember, don't panic. Organize. Do what you can from where you are with what you have.
All right, there you have it. Now, I want to close out because we got to always end with the good Martin Luther King. The only king we acknowledge is Martin Luther. We must recognize that we can't solve our problems now until there is a radical redistribution of economic and political power. This means a revolution of values and other things. We must see now that the evils of racism, economic exploitation, and militarism are all tied together. You can't really get rid of one without getting rid of the others. The whole structure of American life must be changed. America is a hypocritical nation, and we must put our own house in order. Martin Luther King. I want to thank all our guests, and thank you all for listening, and thank you to our engineer, Michael Nasela, and our executive producer, Verna Avery Brown. I hope our listeners will stay tuned for Wake Up and Stay Woke with Dr. Ife Williams. This has been Kimon Freeman with DC Takeover on the What's At Stake, and I'm taking us home as Urban Ave 31 featuring DC's own Raheem Devon. Heaven help us. Stay safe, stay strong, stay woke.
Heaven, help us. Heaven, help us. We got like heaven, seven continents. Heaven, help us. Heaven, help us.
Heaven, help the kid in Somalia with no food to eat. Heaven help that homeless man with no shoes or swollen feet. And heaven help that brother and that queen he beats in the streets. And heaven create strength for my people in time when they're feeling weak. Heaven help us all.
Heaven help us all. Heaven help us.
Heaven help us all.
Heaven help us all.
Heaven help us. When I'm wrong and when I'm right. Heaven help the blood, sweat, and tears that it took to make this record. And heaven help those that need this lesson to listen and perfect it and check it. Help them all.
Heaven help us all. Heaven help us. Heaven help us all.
Heaven
help us all.
Heaven
help us.
Heaven help us all.
Men,
be strong for your ladies.
Heaven,
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 heaven, heaven, heaven, heaven, heaven,
Heaven help us understand when you take your soldiers home. Heaven help us understand that nothing lasts forever. But heaven help us see, on this planet we got to live together. On this planet we got to love together. Heaven help us through the stormy weather. Heaven help us all. Step away from walls, walls bursting in air. Does anybody care? It's a modern day basketball. Are you gonna watch it go?
The Capital Area Food Bank is offering free food distribution for federal workers starting now until the government reopens. Federal employees and contractors will need to show a government work ID to receive food. Distribution times and sites are as follows. Tuesdays, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at No Limits Outreach Ministries, 7721 Barlow Road, Hyattsville, Maryland. Wednesdays, 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at So What Else, 6116 Executive Boulevard, North Bethesda, Maryland. Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at United Community, 7511 Fordston Road, Alexandria, Virginia. Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at Urban Outreach, 5343 C Street, Southeast, Washington, D.C. Saturdays, 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. at Linda Ben Foundation, 10739 Tucker Street, Beltsville, Maryland. WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time. Thank you, family, for standing with WPFW during our fall drive. Because of your support, we shared powerful moments. The No Kings protest, the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March, and a moving all-day broadcast on the struggles in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Listeners in the Congo downloaded our radio app, tuned in, and sent us messages of gratitude, proof that your generosity connects people around the world. We came within $30,000 of our goal. If you are able, please help us close the gap and keep WPFW strong. Go to our website at wpfwfm.org, where you can donate or get our P.O. Box number of where to send checks. WPFW, Jazz and Justice, people-powered radio, connecting our communities globally, while building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly five decades. We provide news, music worth listening to, and in-depth conversations about your community and the world. One of the many ways that you could contribute is to donate a vehicle that you no longer need, running or not. It can do wonders for WPFW, so donate it for a tax break. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and Justice wherever you are.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or a daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of Africa Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Good morning and welcome to